The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio. Keep your mission on your mind, and your mind on your mission. This is Mission Minded with Michael Coleman.
Along with Michael Coleman, formerly of the Jimmy Hale Mission, now with the Montgomery Area Food Bank, that's MAFB.org. Check them out and help them out anywhere you can possibly do. Listen to the Mission Minded show right here on Tony Curry Radio. Mission Minded on at least 5 days a week. And, of course, you can hear it indefinitely on our Tony Curry Radio podcast series. And, by the way, Michael, I think I shared this with you. Spotify actually reached out to us because of some of our musically elemented shows that we do, including Blues Almighty and, of course, the Damon Johnson Show, When in Rome with Stuart Rome. This obviously didn't have a music element, but it is music to a lot of business people's ears when they listen to the show. You can hear the show as many times you want wherever you get your podcast. We're on every major industry out there on Tony Curry Radio Podcast. 2023 is well in hand, and I know you're working a lot of things when we're recording this show. It's, of course, a federal holiday, so happy federal holiday or happy MLK Jr. Day to you. But how you doing, man? Everything good?
Yeah, we were. That's what we were discussing before the show. Mm-hmm. It's federal holiday celebrating Dr. King and all his accomplishments, and, of course, we are right here in the heart of that here in Montgomery, but of course I'm at work because when you're the boss or when you're the business owner, work never ends.
That's right.
So, yeah. So I won't be giving any lectures about work balance, work-life balance in the next few weeks because I would be the biggest hypocrite in the world in doing so.
Well, let me ask you something since we're talking about this and this is unscripted. We kind of like it this way, but when it comes to work, what did the doctor teach us about work in the workplace since you are down in the Montgomery area? And what can you tell me about how he swayed the way people think about the way we work on a regular basis?
Martin Luther King, the more I studied him and read his thoughts, he was really so remarkable in his insights into human nature. And really, what I value is how he describes everybody as having value. And the problem today is both political parties have taken Dr. King's message sometimes, and it just gets and puts it in the context of the argument they're trying to win. And the problem with that is it really diminishes him. But in regards to business, boy, if you just follow just his life outlook, which is you treat everybody with dignity, you put others' needs ahead of your own, you have a servant heart, and you want to make an impact on society by working against the ills of society, and of course we all have that to differing degrees depending on where we work, and so if you just brought that within your organization. You know, I'm talking about things where people aren't necessarily treated fairly. It might be race-related. It might be class-related. It might be each business might have a good old boy system, and some are included and some are excluded. But just being mindful of that and showing respect to your employees and showing value to them, I tell you, can just go a long way.
There is no doubt, and we hope that everyone's celebrating, of course, MLK Jr. Day today. Pardon me, I just got the hiccups here on the big show by just listening to you talk. We got some great stuff to get into this morning, and this afternoon, whenever you're listening, of course, to Mission Minded here on our podcast series, and we take your emails, info@tonycurryradio.net, info@tonycurryradio.net. We got a great question here. Hey, love listening to the show. This is about, and I'm going to paraphrase because it's pretty long, but how much power should employees have? I'm going to take this back. You know, we worked at Cumulus Radio. At one point, I think we had about 65 to 70 people in the building, probably 30 on both sides of the office. And that was the GM's office was in the middle. And one side was sales. The other side was programming. And sales and programming, we were always butting heads. And that's when radio was great. because programming thought, you know what, we're not selling that particular brand because that doesn't fit our format. Sales would go, listen, you don't have programming if we're not putting the radio station on the air, so we must make the money. And those two things, it was 50-50. We fought forever. And then finally, when it all decided it was all about the bottom line, programming lost a big grip on exactly how we were going to sound and how we were going to portray that content on air. And so we had a GM, and I won't mention him by name, probably not one of my favorite GMs, but was one of those my way or the highway kind of guys. And I remember he made several big decisions that not only dictated the way we were operating from a radio standpoint, but also the content that we were portraying on the air when we were doing sports radio. And I remember vividly him sitting there telling us that we were going to have to do things a certain way, that it was not a corporate situation, but it was his situation, and that this was not a democratic process. I'm not asking for your votes. I'm just telling you this is the way it's going to be. And I remember how that made us feel, because one of the reasons I got radio, I was paid really, really well to portray my opinion. You know, anyone can give scores. Anyone can tell you what the schedule is. And we're not liner jocks. We would have an angle. We would have an idea on something, and then we would go off on it. And I really kind of felt like I was being squelched in a way and being told, hey, you can no longer talk about this, this, and this. And I really want you to stay away from this particular subject. And a lot of it was political, by the way. It really bothered me, because I was like, this is not why I got into radio. Now I was one of those guys that was always willing to take it off the rails. And I called myself the third day guy. By the time a big story came out, by Thursday, it was time to really dig deep and really take a different angle and a different approach on the topic we were on, because everyone was talking about the same thing and it would get old. And so I really felt like I had a foot on my neck. And I vividly remember that. But depending on where you're working and how you work and what your job entails, sometimes it's important to let your employees have a say in how things are going to be run in your business. Should bosses ask the crew before big changes are made? Should businesses be run more democratically? And what's the pitfalls of giving employees more power? What's your initial thought on that?
Yeah, a lot of different thoughts. Matter of fact, we could easily take up the rest of this time just discussing that one. And so, as I look at that, I've kind of wrote down some, as I was listening to you read the question and just kind of having some initial thoughts, because, you know, a lot of this is not, you don't give me these questions a week out and we talk about them and plan them out. A lot of this is off the cuff. Mm-hmm. But one of these questions is very interesting. I mean, one aspect of it. So let's just take this first part here is how much power should employees have? And it's so interesting. It depends on how you're defining power. I think managers or bosses, as you described, kind of that authoritarian style, is only necessary in very few instances. At times it is necessary to put your foot down, make a decision, and move forward. But that should be used rarely. And unfortunately, it's some people's only leadership style. They look at power as not a way to benefit others, but a way to build their own ego and their own power base. Look at authority, I should say. I go back to the Army. I may have shared this example before. I spent 20 years in the Army, but when you transition from being an enlisted soldier to being a non-commissioned officer, so let's say you pin on sergeant stripes for the first time.
Yes.
And so you go from being one of the guys into being a leader, you usually see two extremes, one of which guys don't know how to make that transition. So they still want to be one of the guys.
Yep.
But now you have moved into, in essence, military management, and you have to make decisions and be the bad guy sometimes and work with your team and enforce what the rules are in a way that you didn't necessarily do when you're one of the guys. And some people just absolutely can't really struggle to do that. But the other extreme of that is guys go, oh, okay, now people have to do what I say, and they'll find anybody who ranks under them and finds anything wrong to begin to exert their authority. There's a rush to that. And so some people really don't know how to use authority for the good of others. And all of us have to learn. I remember when I pinned on my sergeant stripes and later became an officer and had authority, I certainly get the temptation for when you see things you don't like, is to just say, I'm gonna exert my authority on this situation and squash thoughts, squash opinions, squash objections. But really what you are creating such an unhealthy overall culture that it's likely, I would say almost, unless you're just paying so tremendously well, then in that kind of culture, you're giving people a reason to go other places. And so lots of times when you're like that, you don't count the cost of turnover, trying to find new people that are just as good as the person that left, can create the same things, have the same abilities. And so lots of times your product over time is hurt. And so that's one aspect of it. But the other aspect, if you ask me just without really knowing the context, when you say power, I say, I want my employees to have absolute as much power as possible. And here's why I say that. It's my job to give the people in my organization a vision of where to go. In other words, not necessarily day to day. It's here's what we're trying to get to collectively, and everybody has to get there, or none of us can get there because one department can't go achieve that because that breaks the whole organization apart. So we all have to get there arm in arm. So some departments can move quicker than others, but I want people, if every decision and every thought of an organization rests within me, then we're not going to move. We're not going to grow nearly as fast because no human has the bandwidth to make every decision for every department in a large organization. So when I want them to have power, but I've got to be able to restrain that power in the sense that I'm going to give them a boundary. And that's what vision does. Vision says, hey, we're headed north. So you have to understand that all your decisions have to be rooted in the idea that I'm trying to move my department north. If I make a decision, the boundary is, if I make a decision, but it's going to move my department south or west or east, in other words, in a different direction than when I'm moving the whole other group, then that's not going to be a good decision. But if I have somebody who can consistently look at their department and make decisions independent of me standing right over them, that's a win for me because they are empowered to help move. And I want to empower others. And really the goal is, let's say that I'm out sick for 2 weeks. There should not, if I'm a good boss, this organization should run as if I'm sitting in my office.
Yep.
There should not be any difference. But if you're making all the decisions when you're, if you're away, whether it's traveling, vacation, whatever it is, then everything comes to a grinding halt. And so that's the foundation for why I want, and I think I've touched on this before, is that, some bosses don't want to do that because that's where they get their power base. Hey, they need me here.
Yep.
And that's why I make all the decisions. I don't trust people. And so if that's the question is, I want them to have all the power that they have the capability within the parameters with which I set. I'll give you another little example of that is I give, my development directors a budget, and they have a company credit card. And, if I'm concerned about major purchases, I'll just make this up without sharing MAFB business. But let's just say, for instance, I say, okay, you have a credit card, you have an approved budget. But I'm going to put a monthly limit on your credit card spending at $2,500 a month for your department.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you need to go beyond that, so you don't have to contact me, as long as you're working within your budget to purchase business things, you can spend $2,500 a month. If you need to go beyond that, then you and I need to have a conversation. Will I approve it? Maybe. I mean, probably likely if you make a good argument. So again, I want to be able to have every department running on their own, all going towards the same direction, but running independently, decisions being made daily, and trusting them to do that. In order to do that, I have to give my employees power and input, and other means to be able to accomplish that.
One of the things that I love about you, and we're talking to Michael Coleman here from Mission Minded, of course, he was formerly with Jimmy Hale Mission, really did fantastic work there, and now, of course, doing the same thing as the CEO of the Montgomery Area Food Bank. They cover 35 counties here in the great state of Alabama. You can hear the show wherever you listen to your podcast, and certainly live on TKR. You're not a one thing I love about you, and as you get a little older, and if you're in your 20s right now, you don't understand this, but passivity has no place in my life at this point in life. It's not to say that I'm going to die by the time I'm 60, but I've dealt with that. I'd rather you just tell me how it is. I'll get over it, but don't string me along. And I think a lot of times, and we've done so many great shows here, and we did the whole show about what type of boss you have. And you mentioned that boss that wants to be one of the guys. There was a good friend of mine who just recently got, it's at a local television station. The guy is 38 years old, and he just became the GM of the television station. The former GM became vice president of the company. And he said, you know, I'm glad for the accommodations, and I'm super happy to be the GM, but I'm treated so differently now. He goes, I hate it. People are whispering around me. They're treating me different. I used to be one of the guys, and all of a sudden they don't talk to me about their husbands, their wives, and what they did over the weekend. And all of a sudden I'm the boss. And he goes, I absolutely hate it. But I do think there's a lot of bosses, obviously, that want to be part of those employees. They want to have some interactions, engagement there, and they treat their employees passively. And what I mean by that is they will tell them what they want to hear, but they never follow through. You've always said, hey, listen, if you got a great idea, come to me. I may not like it. I may not see the use in it, but I may okay it anyway. And you may hit a home run. So a lot of times when you're talking about big ideas or changing the philosophies or the direction of a particular business, it's really in the results, isn't it? I've had a lot of times where I'm like, this is never going to fly, and it doesn't. And then I'm like, I told you. And then I've had some bosses bring some things in, and I'm like, this is crazy, and it works, and that builds equity with me.
Yeah. So it's very important that no matter what level, what I try to do, and like I said, I don't ever want to come across like I've perfected this, because I learn day to day still and make plenty of mistakes along the way. But what I'm trying to do is I may have a multi-level meeting. Like, in other words, I may have directors and managers and supervisors all in the same room, and so it's not necessarily at the same authority level or same position level. But when I'm talking to them, I want them to understand the big picture. That's why, again, you always have to start with vision to know where you're going, because what we do when we problem solve together, everybody has a seat at the table who's been invited. And they can say anything. They're free to object to others' opinions in a respectful way. We just want real thoughts out. But what I feel like is very important to me is don't say no without explaining why you're saying no.
Yeah.
And a lot of people don't like have that challenge. And I've actually verbally said this to everybody in my organization, is if I ever tell you no, you are free. Some people say, well, why not? Some people feel that's disrespectful, because they, you know, we had the parental role, the authoritarian role, like when we're parents and the kids say, well, Dad, why can't I do this? Don't ask me why. Because I said so. That's why.
Uh-huh.
Even in the military, it was very frowned upon to. And I understand that a little bit more, because if you're in the heat of battle and somebody over you is directing you left, right, whatever, you don't have time. If you're under gunfire in a firefight, you don't have time to explain the whys. People just have to respond to commands. But again, that's such the exception. So in this organization, I tell them, I want you to question me. I mean, I want you to feel free, like you can question me if I don't explain the why, because it's important that you understand the why. And here's why I tend to get more buy-in and more acceptance even when I say no. Because if they say, I have an idea, and in my head, I'm like, well, that conflicts in some way with the vision, or it doesn't fit. But I'm in my head, I've come up with a reason. And so I then take the time to explain that and say, well, I like your outside of the box thinking, but if we did this, as you say, here's where it would run contrary to what we're trying to achieve. And most of the time, I would say, seems 90% of the time, they go, oh, that makes sense. Rather than if I say, no, we're not doing that, then they feel diminished. And it's like, wait a minute, you invited my opinion, but you shut down what I'm saying. He or she does not learn. Your employees don't learn that way. They learn by saying, oh, okay, I get it. What I said, it wasn't that my idea was a bad idea. It was that it didn't fit with where the organ where he is leading the organization. So now they go back and they learn and they say, okay, next time I'm problem solving, it's not just coming up with a solution, it's coming up with the best solution that supports the overall mission and doesn't run contrary to it. But that means I have to take the time to walk people through. And do I always have time to do it? No. Do I? But it's just one of those things that's so important to me because otherwise I'm not teaching people, I'm just shutting them down. And then I shouldn't, and when I do that, I shouldn't expect to continue to receive their input where I think I could use it in other cases.
Michael Coleman here, Mission Minded on TKR and wherever you get your podcast, and the Tony Curry Radio Podcast. Let me ask you this. You mentioned if you take 2 weeks off, your business should run well. I think this is the old Andy Griffith Aunt Bea episode. Remember when she left town? And they just trashed the place. And of course, one of the neighbors came over and she had her heart broken because when she got back over there, she felt like she wasn't needed. And so they made it all dirty again. If you are in a situation where maybe you do own a business and you don't want to be in there every stinking day and you want to allow your employees to take more of an ownership in the business, and maybe they're not asking for more money, that and you want to find out what they're made of. I would think, and I've had several bosses do this, where they start us off small. You know, hey, we're having a Christmas party in December, and I don't have any ideas on what you guys want to do for a Christmas party. Put together some ideas. Maybe we'll put together, you know, a little board of people that will do the Christmas party, and we'll see how you run it. Start small, and then allow them to become part of that quote unquote democratic process at a much smaller level. Something maybe doesn't even affect your business. Does that work?
Yeah, absolutely, it works. And as a matter of fact, there's it's impossible. If you do not hand off authority, it's impossible to know at what capacity your employees have and how much actually you're leaving on the table. I mean, isn't it a shame that you're paying somebody, let's say, $50,000 a year to do something, but you only give them small levels of responsibility? But instead of saying, okay, let's see what you're capable of, and I'm going to give you not just task, but give you processes to oversee. And you start with one and evaluate and coach. But I have seen people, again, I've seen so much, I see way more bad leadership than I do good leadership. And the bad leadership goes, well, I gave you a process and you failed at it. So now I know I'm just going to do it myself. That is not an employee problem. That is a leader problem. And last time I encountered that, I really grilled, not in an angry way, but just really was very direct with that leader and said, okay, my question is, when you discovered that person, your employee failed, what follow-up did you do? And she was like, what do you mean? And I said, did you bring the employee in and say, okay, I asked you to do this. When I said that, what did you think I meant? In other words, I want you to tell me what you thought I assigned you to do. And lots of times from the very beginning, there's been miscommunications as to what expectations there are. And so lots of times people who don't naturally want to give up power and control, when they do that, like, oh, well, I delegated that out. And they were terrible at it. So now that's my reason to be able to maintain control, which is how I want to operate anyway. And they don't tell you that, but that's what they do. But somebody who genuinely is trying to develop people, I mean, I tell directors, You should be, if you have managers under you, you should be giving, you should be training those managers how to do your job and trusting them and coaching them. It's not about, here it is, can you do it? It's about, okay, do you see what I see? How do I help you see? Here's all the things you take into consideration. I'm going to let you do this, and then let me come back and evaluate, and then you and I'll sit down and talk about what you're doing well and where you can make improvements.
Yeah, and I think a lot of managers, to your point, end up doing the work themselves because they're insecure in their own, in
That's
their
right.
own man. They don't want to teach anybody how to do their job because they're afraid they'll end up taking their job down the road. And it's, I mean, it's really insecure because you've been put in that position for a reason. The other thing I think is really interesting, and I've seen this at a million of levels, and I'm sure you've seen this in the military, where everyone else thinks they know how to do the boss's job better than the boss is doing it. And they have no idea what the situation is. He doesn't know what he's doing. I could do it better. But then when they're put in that position, or if they're ever put in that position or given that opportunity, they have no clue what they're doing. And I've even seen that at the level of Tony Curry Radio, where
Well,
just because you're really good at everything you're doing, and I appreciate everything you're
yeah.
doing for me, you have no clue what it's like to be a business owner.
That's right. And it's very interesting. Going back to what I'd said before, that affects what we're talking about right now, because if you take the time to explain all the considerations that go in to so you have an organization with eight different departments, and you're trying to synchronize, even though they're completely different, you're trying to synchronize them and create this synergy across all the departments, which is not just about processes, but it's about vision and following it and all of that, and bringing different personalities and different skills. And so it's so easy, like you said. I have a brother-in-law who works for a major car manufacturer and is critical of them from the from all our conversations are negative about this particular car company. And yet he works in one small department and he sees it from one small perspective, but he thinks all the management are idiots and oh, you know, and I'm sitting there thinking to myself, you know, I don't push back on it. I just listen. But I think to myself, that's the norm, is people down there and they see it from, okay, I put doors on cars, but I'm looking at how the HR policy or the operations policy or the higher levels of the decisions that are made, only seeing things from such a little peephole, and yet I'm going to declare that the people making those decisions are absolute idiots. And it's comical in a way, but I get it. I mean, but rarely do you have people who say, I want to see a bigger picture. And that's why, again, if I don't get as much of that in organizations I run, and I think it's because I take the time to inform them of everything that's going into that decision. And when I do that, they feel more value. And the last thing I'll say about this is, well, I want to encourage people. Look, when you get good employees, if you will entrust them and knowing they're going to make mistakes and allow for them to make mistakes, as they grow, just like your people over you allowed you to make mistakes and grow, if you will do that, here's the win-win. You're going to be able to focus on things that are really important and not have to do the nitinoid things because you can entrust people under you to handle those kind of responsibilities. But you also will get opportunities to give people meaningful work, which will make them feel like a valued part of the team, and then going back and applauding their efforts and patting them on the back. And then what you've done is you've created job satisfaction, or at least a higher degree to it, and it makes it much more difficult for the warehouse down the street or the business down the street to come get that employee because they enjoy coming to work so much better. They feel part of the team, they feel valued. And so somebody's not going to leave you for $1,500 more, or if it's a bad situation, they might leave you for $1,500 less just to get out from underneath your control.
Michael, I know that you're doing fantastic work for the Montgomery Area Food Bank, MAFB.org. 2023 is going to be a great year for you. How can people find you and how can they help?
Yeah, you can. Of course, I'm on LinkedIn, and also MAFB.org. And I would just tell you, just ask people to keep our folks in your prayers. In Alabama, we've had already a lot of tornadoes. We had a tornado that hit close to here, several. One in Selma did tons of damage, but we had one that went down one particular street and took seven lives in Autauga County. And part of what our job is disaster recovery as well. So we ship food, water, supplies, anything we have. We make sure that those, not just those who were affected, but the workers who come out and help with that. You know, we oftentimes can hit the ground before FEMA can't come until the president declares a disaster. He just recently did a few days ago. We're thankful for that. But oftentimes when we have things like that, you know, organizations like us are the first on the ground to be able to meet needs. So if people ever want to respond to that or donate to that, they can go to MAFB.org and support us in that way. And appreciate everybody listening. Appreciate your support. Hope everybody just continues to have a great 2023.
Keep up the good work, brother. I appreciate you.
All right, bud.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.